sahanavavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, sahaviryam karvavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu mavidvishavahai. Om shanti, shanti, shanti. Welcome back, everyone, and welcome to the people watching online. I'm finally remembering to welcome them as well. Kakhalunalankriyate, drishta drishtartha sadhana patiyan. Drishta drishtartha sadhana patiya amuya kanthasthitaya amuya kanthasthitaya prashnotara ratna malikaya I'm holding this the wrong way. Kasmat siddhihi tapasaha buddhi kvano bhusure kuto buddhihi vriddhopasevaya ke vriddhaha ye dharma tat Vagnyaha, ye dharma tatvagnyaha, sambhavitasya maranadhikam kim, sambhavitasya maranadhikam kim, duryasho bhavati, sho, loke sukhi bhavet kaha, loke sukhi bhavet kaha, dhanavan, dhanam api chakim, yatascheshtam, sarva sukhanam bijam kim, punyam, dukham api kutaha, papat, yakkhila shankaram aradhayet bhaktya. So we had seen up to here last time, what is Aishwaryam, what is lordship, what is divine, how do we get that qualities that we would like to have. And we saw an example, a comparison from the Shivananda Lahari, where it says Aishwaryam is as easy as seeing or gaining, having an amala fruit on the hand, but not for everybody, only for the bhaktya, for the devotee. So with devotion, we can get this Aishwaryam. Ko vardhate vinita ko vahiyate yodriptah ko na pratyetavyah brute yashaschanrutam shashvat. So ko vardhate, kaha vardhate, who grows, who succeeds, who progresses in life? And the answer, this can be in a very worldly context, not necessarily in a spiritual context, but it applies to anywhere in our life. How do we grow, or who grows? Vinitaha, the one who is humble, who is not proud or arrogant with his or her achievements and successes. You've noticed many times pride comes along with arrogance. Someone who is very boastful obviously is very arrogant. There is a shloka from Niti Shastra which compares this arrogant person to a stiff mountain. And it says, Na kaschit garvito loke devaihi api subpujitaha. So loke in this world, a garvitaha, a garvita is this proud, arrogant person. Na kaschit supujitaha is never honored or is never worshipped. Worshipped even by the gods. What it means is he is never honored in society. And it says even by the gods. Why? Why is that? Giri Shringani, Shringa means a peak of the mountain. So like high mountain peaks, you've seen mountains stand up really tall. So a person who has arrogance or pride is compared to this tall mountain. And it says, this Giri Shringani, even high mountain peaks, eventually patanti, they fall or they crumble. While trina means grass. So a cluster of grass, which symbolizes humility, vardhante, it grows. So a high mountain peak, which symbolizes the arrogant person, falls eventually, whereas a cluster of grass, which is very flexible, it continues to grow. So our goal is to not be like this tall, you know, mountains, tall mountains are very nice to look at, right? When you go to Colorado, I've been to that, seen those mountains in Colorado. They look so nice and majestic, or if anybody has been to the Himalayas. But eventually, that is, and when you compare that look of the mountain with the grass, which sways with even a little breeze, you would think it's nice to be that tall mountain. You're like so steady and so firm. While that grass is always, can fall off any time. But this metaphor is really comparing this mountain to a very arrogant person who is so stiff and so full of pride that the mountain will eventually fall. And the theme continues, va kaha hiyate, who kaha, who hiyate, who does not grow, who does not prosper, yaha driptaha, one who is proud or arrogant. There is a Zen proverb that says, you cannot fill a cup that is already full. This is, you know, many of you might have heard this metaphor. So an arrogant person assumes that he or she knows everything already. When that attitude is there, so if a person thinks that he or she knows everything already, and I'm sure many of you may know such people in your very close vicinity, in your very close contacts, there is no opportunity for growth for such a person, be it worldly growth, or be it spiritual growth. So if in the worldly sense, if you know of such a person at work and you have a work-related event or a party, who wants to hang out, sit with this person, right? Because all they're doing is talking about their own, look how great I am, look what I've done. And it's the same thing in a satsanga. If somebody is constantly, and I've noticed this used to happen a lot many years back when we didn't have video recordings of satsanga. It happens occasionally now too. So somebody will ask Swamiji a question, and Swamiji will reply. And then somebody will raise their hand and want to add their take on it. I'm not suggesting it comes with arrogance, but there are people who want to be heard. But not it, the satsanga, mean, especially with a guru, with a sannyasi, may not be the right forum to share your wisdom when you have a sannyasi sitting there sharing his wisdom with you. So somebody who has such arrogance and pride, in American slang, you would say that somebody who's full of it, full of himself or herself, such a person does not succeed or grow. And the last part of this verse, kaha na pratyetavyaha, who is not to be trusted, who is not to be, the translation says trusted. And the answer, brute yaha cha anritam shashvata, yaha, the one who, brute, speaks or utters, anritam. Anritam, literally, ritam is truth, anritam, non-truths or lies. And when? Not once in a while, but shashvat. Again and again, repeatedly. And why do you not, why does it say, I mean, it's kind of obvious why you can't trust such a person. But what happens very often when you tell a lie, even if it is a white lie, one lie usually leads to another lie. And I got this example. So supposing you want to, presuming you're working, and you can think of any example in your own life, and you want to see this great concert on a Tuesday. And you, obviously it's a work day, and you tell a lie, you call in sick, and you go to see this concert. What happens next day when you, so that is the initial lie. When you go into work the next day, you have to give a maintenance lie, right? So you have to cover up that lie, and you say you return. You're actually feeling pretty good because you've seen this concert and you've enjoyed it. You come to work, but then you have to pretend that you're, fake cough, or you're like extremely tired and you're dragging your feet. You have to make that first lie now look real. Then a coworker asks you, did you see the doctor? Because now, of course, post-COVID, everybody's worried. You have somebody coughing. You want them not, you don't want to be near them. And to cover that, you tell the coworker, I did see a doctor. So that is the interaction lie. Your interact. We have somebody coughing here. I'm kidding. We have the interaction lie. So you tell a second lie that you went to see the doctor. Later, and maybe this is not needed, I don't know how many workplaces require this. You're in school, I know, kids are required to produce a doctor's note, right, that you were sick. So your boss asks you, you need to submit your doctor's note, ask you, did you get a note from the doctor for the HR? And now you're trapped. So you must now say another lie. And what if it was a kid, if my dog ate my homework, my dog ate the note, you would say maybe, their system was down, the doctor's office was down, so they're going to mail it to me. And then you have the memory or the collapse or the memory lie or the burden lie. So what happens 2 weeks later, you're perfectly okay, you're having a conversation in your, water cooler conversation, and somebody in your coworker says, I went to that concert and it was so great. And you say, it was great, I loved it. And then that same coworker says, hey, but I thought, that coworker's memory is really good. That coworker says, hey, I thought you were sick that day. And then you say, you have another lie. And you say, I was sick. I meant I was actually in bed. I watched it on YouTube later. So see, this one lie leads to another lie. So even if it is a white lie, even if it is something very innocuous, it may seem almost harmless, what's the harm in calling in sick? Or, whatever situation that you... I see this a lot, and now, of course, not much now with the usage of cell phones earlier, before the advent of cell phones. If somebody rang, your phone rang, and the husband did not want to answer the phone or speak to whoever it was, the wife would pick up the phone and ask who's calling. And if the husband did not want, or husband, spouse, whoever, whichever person did not want to answer the, talk to the person, they would say, tell them, I'm not there at home. And now, of course, you get the caller ID, so if you don't want to answer, you just don't pick up the phone. But even a small lie ends up leading to more lies. So it's very important as a practice for us to be aware of that very first lie that we are about to say. The very first lie we tell others, how about ourselves? And the best example I can give, when you are, if you are supposed to be, your doctor's told you you have to avoid sweets, you have to be on some diet, low-carb diet, but you love sweets. And what is the lie you tell yourself? Three little words Swamiji keeps using. Just this once, yes, just this one. Who are you lying to? You're not lying to anybody else. It's not causing anybody else harm. But you're lying to yourself, and it's causing you harm. And usually, do you think that's the only time you eat that sweet that you're not supposed to? It happens again. So just to be very aware of our mental chatter that we tell ourselves or the lies that we tell others. Kutra anrute pi apapam, kutra anrute pi apapam, yachoktam dharma rakshartham, yachoktam dharma rakshartham, ko dharmaha. Abhimato shishtanam nijakulinanam, abhimato shishtanam nijakulinanam. So you'll be surprised to know that the scriptures themselves permit lying in very restricted cases. There are very special instances where it is okay to lie. So the first half of this verse says, kutra, in which cases, anrute, anrute api, anrute api apapam. In which cases, anrute api, even a lie, apapam, does not incur sin, does not, is not considered adharmic. And the answer is, yat cha uktam, that which is said, uktam, that which is said, for what? Dharma raksha artham, for the sake of artham, for the sake of raksha, protecting dharma. So when dharma has to be protected, it is okay to tell. The scriptures say that you will not incur a sin. So there is this story of sage Kaushika in the Mahabharata. This Kaushika was a young ascetic who had taken a vow to tell the truth always, who had taken a very, to always be truthful. And he had become famous in, you know, in his village, wherever he was. And people believed that whatever he said was the truth, because he was so rigid and he was so committed to the vow that he took. So one day, while he was sitting and meditating, a group of travelers rushed past him, ran past him, terrified. And they went, and they were being pursued by a band of robbers, by a band of violent dacoits, and they ran past him and they hid in the bushes next to where Kaushika was sitting and meditating. So the bandits quickly arrived there, and knowing Kaushika's reputation for telling the truth, they knew if they asked him, he would tell the truth. So they asked him, where are the travelers? And Kaushika, because of his commitment to telling the truth, he had a moral dilemma. But he ended up telling the truth, because his commitment to telling the truth was very intense. And he said, they're hiding in the bushes. And what happens? The bandits, the dacoits, steal from the travelers and they kill them. For this for this action of Kaushika, the story goes on and says, despite his lifelong dedication to truth, when he dies, he goes to a lower loka. Kaushika, you would think, oh, he's been so truthful, it's a lot of punyam, and he would go to heaven, but he goes to a lower loka. And why? Because him telling the truth led to himsa. Telling the truth led to the killing of those travelers, of innocent people. There is something called apat dharma. Apat means calamity or distress. So dharma, during the time of calamity or distress, is called apat dharma, and it acknowledges that life is not black and white. For all of us, life is not black and white. There are shades of gray. So the principle of ahimsa, I'll remind you from a few classes before, it is not no harm, it is least harm, not only to everyone involved in the situation, but it includes you as well. So least harm in a particular situation. And this ahimsa takes precedence over satyam, over truth. And in the Mahabharata and Manusmriti, there are verses which list five situations where it is okay to lie, where telling a lie will not incur papam. And one of them is saving a life. The story many of you might have heard before, a variation of it that Swamiji tells. So Swamiji, in Swamiji's version, the travelers come running, and this sadhu is meditating, and they tell him that the bandits are chasing us. So he tells them, go and hide in the bushes. And when the bandits, dacoits, come, they ask this sadhu, did you see them? Where are the travelers? And in that version, the sadhu not only stands up and tells them, yeah, I saw them, he leads them, takes them to the opposite direction, and he says, look, if you go quickly now, you'll be able to catch them. So that version is saying how dharma, not causing harm, overrides truth. And the next part of the verse says, kaha dharmaha, what is dharmaha? We've seen many definitions of dharma in this verse, in this text, and it's here it says, abhimataha, that which is desired or practiced, that which is accepted, by whom? Shishtanam nijakulinanam. Shishtanam, by the wise or the learned person, who are kulinanam, who live a noble life, who are elders who practice dharma, not once or twice, nija, constantly. So we've seen this idea before in prior verses, hanging out with people who are dharmic, who follow dharma, with learned people, because they can be role models for us, especially, growing up for children, but even for adults. We saw in one class a comparison of, hanging out with a good person, yeah, I think it was last class or the prior class, is like that fragrance in that agarbatti lit when you sit in a closed room and there's an agarbatti or an incense stick lit in that room. When you leave that room, you carry that fragrance along with you, and you can spread that to others. So hanging out with good people, with dharmic people, is compared to that fragrance, that goodness. Sadhu balam kim, daivam, daivam, kasadhu, kasadhu, sarvada tushtaha, sarvada tushtaha. Kim sadhu balam. Kim balam, what is the strength of a sadhu? Sadhu has many meanings. It can mean a good person, an honest person, a virtuous one, or literally a sadhu. Sadhu as an adjective in Sanskrit also means, like in a concert when you say shabash, Encore, sadhu also means that. So if you were watching a Sanskrit play or a Sanskrit drama and you want to applaud and say, very good, you would say sadhu. But here it's a noun. And the answer is daivam. So what is the strength of a sadhu? Daivam. Literally it means that which comes or belongs to the god. To the gods. It can mean divine power or will. Here we can take it as punyam. Punyam, even though punyam, our punyam comes as our punyam fructifies in our life based on the actions we do, we also can say that it is coming from God. Why is this punyam the strength of for a good person? And we saw in the last class how this punyam was the seed, bijam, sarva sukhana, for all happiness. And it's we saw this earlier, when you do dharmic actions, our punya increases. Remember that Chitragupta, the accountant, divine accountant, sitting up there and doling out, okay, you did punyam, you get this reward. You did papam, you get this punishment. This adrishta phalam, the unseen results that come to us. I hope you know, I'm pretty sure you're most mature. Most of you are, I'm hoping all of you are mature enough to know that's a story, right? The story of Chitragupta. If you're thinking that, oh, there is a Chitragupta sitting there somewhere, watching us all the time, and we have to face him when we die, you know, if that is your version now, maybe it's time to grow out of that. So the results of our action, both the drishta and the adrishta phalam, the seen and the unseen results of our action, come according to the laws of karma, and the laws of karma are in keeping with Ishwara's laws, Ishwara's order, using Pooja Swamiji's words, and that is why this is considered to be daivam. So we get, why is this a strength of sadhu? When we do favorable, when we do dharmic actions, we get punyam, and that punyam leads to favorable situations in our life. When we do adharmic actions, that leads to papam, which leads to difficulties in our life. And this, since a sadhu is one, a good person or a virtuous person is one who does a lot of, who does dharmic action, he has a lot of punyam. So that punyam is his or her strength. And who is a sadhu? Kaha sadhu? A different take on the definition of who a sadhu is, and it says sarvada tushtaha. The one who is tushta, who is content, sarvada, always, who is content or happy in all situations. So if you are wondering, how can anyone be content and happy in all situations, capital bolded, all situations, you know that's not practical, right? You know, even if you have a lot of punyam, you are a sadhu in many ways, how is it possible to be always contented? And the contentment of a sadhu is not because, doesn't come because of things, because of people, things that he or she has, because of people, because of relationships he or she has, but it comes from an internal contentment and the recognition that for that internal contentment, nothing from outside is needed. No thing is needed, no person is needed, no pet is needed. So there is in Bhagavad Gita, in the second chapter, Lord Krishna explains when he describes the quality of an enlightened person. So somebody who is sarvada tushtaha, somebody who is content always, can only be an enlightened person. Or only an enlightened person can be content always. And Sri Krishna explains, prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. Yada, when prajahati, one abandons or gives up what? Sarvan kaman, all desires, manogatan, which are arise in the mind, which are born of the mind. O partha Arjuna, so how do we give up desires? That's a huge, it's a huge block that many of us, all of us have. How do we give up desires? How do we give up those binding desires? And Sri Krishna answers, Atmani eva atmana tushtaha sthita prajnyaha tada uchyate. Tushtaha, so when one gives up all the desires that arise, all the binding desires, one is tushtaha, one is content or satisfied always. How? Atmani eva, in the self alone. How? By the self, atmana. So by oneself. So that first self, atmani eva, is the capital S. So when we recognize our wholeness, our fullness within, and that nothing outside is required to make us content, to make us happy, sthita prajnyaha tada uchyate. Sthita prajnyaha literally means prajnyaha, one whose wisdom, one whose knowledge is sthita, is firm. So, and it's a shorthand for enlightened person. So such a person, uchyate, is said to be steady, to be an enlightened person. Such a person is said to be a sadhu. And how do we gain this steady wisdom, the steady abiding, the steady knowledge of our fullness? Everything we are doing here, all the shravana we are doing, all the classes you're attending, all the manana you hopefully are, many of you are doing, questioning, all the nididhyasana, all the practices that help us assimilate what we have already learned. All practices, not only shravana, manana, nididhyasana, but things like puja, chanting, meditation, all these practices help us gain that steady wisdom so that we no longer are bound by our binding desires, so that we no longer feel compelled to fulfill our binding desires, to seek that contentment outside. So such a person, sadhu, a sadhu is sarvada tushtaha. Daivam kim, yat sukritam, kas sukriti, shlaghyate cha yasadbhihi. Shlaghyate cha yasadbhihi. So daivam kim, daivam, what is punyam, yat sukritam. Krutam, what is done, deeds which are, yat krutam, that are done. What kind of deeds? Good deeds or dharmic deeds. We already saw how every action we do has a pending unseen result. That is that punyam that we get. And then kaha sukriti. And who is a sukriti, a person who does these good deeds, who is a good, virtuous, righteous or benevolent person? Yaha cha shlaghyate, yaha shlaghyate, one who is, shlag means to praise, one who is praised, by whom? Praised or respected by whom? Sadbhihi, sadbhihi, by the wise or the learned people. So when is praise meaningful? When it is given by a credible source, like a leader. So when you have done some praiseworthy, let me talk about what I'm familiar with. So if you publish a paper or if you get a Nobel Prize and you get praise for that, but if you get praise for that by janitorial staff in your work, is that praise meaningful? If you get praise by the Nobel Prize committee, that's a meaningful praise. So here, there is an example. in chapter 16 of the Bhagavad Gita, where Lord Krishna is describing the divine, daivim and asurim sampat, divine and demonic traits. In verse 4 of chapter 16, he describes the asuri, the demonic traits, and he's telling Arjuna, and Arjuna is wondering, do I have this? So Krishna sees Arjuna's worry, and in the very next verse, he tells Arjuna, daivim sampat, sampadam abhijatah asi. You are born with these divine qualities, ma shuchaha, do not worry Pandava, O Arjuna. So here, Arjuna's divine traits, whether Arjuna's qualities, are being praised by none other than Sri Krishna. What more credible source can there be than Lord Krishna? On the flip side, so here the verse is saying, who is a person who does good? Who is a person who does good? One who gets, who's praised by wise people or by good people. You might have heard this or read of this story a couple years back of Joshua Bell, who is an acclaimed violinist in 2007. There was a story in, there was a social experiment that was set up. He was playing the violin in the subway, subway. The experiment was done to study human behavior and how we see the world clouds our judgment. So this Joshua Bell, and I don't know if you've heard him. I really like him. He's a very, very, very praise coming from me doesn't mean anything because I don't know anything about the violin. I just know that I like his music. So he was playing in a busy DC subway station during the morning rush hour. And he was playing on his $3.5 million violin. And he was, you know, when you see these subway or street players, they usually have their instrument box open and people give some, throw some money for tips. And he looked like any other street player. He didn't have fancy clothes like he would wear in a concert. And just a few days back, his concert a few blocks away was sold out. So there was no tickets for his wonderful concert. And he played for about, the experiment said, he played for 45 minutes and more than 1,000 people walked by. Most ignored him. A few people stopped and threw a dollar bill. And one woman in particular stopped for a moment. She listened and then told him, you know, you're not actually half bad. You should keep practicing and you might really have a future in music. So this experiment, we can presume that this woman like me didn't know anything about the violin. So a praise coming from a not credible source doesn't mean anything. So one who is praised by the good person, Sukrit by a sadbihi, is a doer of goods, a doer of good. Of course, we have to recognize we don't need to get praise to do dharmic actions, to do good. And that's, I would add, when you don't look for praise from anybody, that is taking dharma to another level. You're doing dharma because it is the right thing to do, whether people acknowledge it or not. Grihamedhinascha mitram kim grihamedhin bharya bharya ko gruhicha kro gruhicha yo yajate sucha and kim mitram, who is a friend of who? Grihamedhinaha. Who is a grihamedhin? A grihamedhin is literally, the definition of a grihamedhin is a married brahmana who has a household. So we could loosely translate it as a householder. And who is a friend? The answer is bharya, his wife. We have to underline that his wife, not anybody else's wife. So friend, that's a whole different topic and we won't get there. So the wife is supposed to be a friend or a partner to the husband and vice versa. In Raghuvamsha of Kalidas, a beautiful poem, there is the story of King Aja who loses his wife Indumati, and he laments his loss in the first half of the shloka, where he describes all the roles that his wife, that a wife plays, all the roles that his wife filled for him. They are Gruhini, she is the mistress, mistress not in the negative sense, mistress or the caretaker, a manager of the house. She is a Sachivaha, a counsel to the husband. She's a Sakhi, a friend or a companion, a Mitha, and that relationship is mutual, both between both spouses. Priya Shishya, a wife is a dear pupil. Remember in ancient times, and we have many Upanishadic stories, where the rishi is a teacher for his wife, for his children. She is Lalite, who is gentle, who is charming, and she was Kala Vidhau. She was talented, very artistic. So in the first half of the verse, this king is really lamenting and talking about all these qualities that his wife had. And the second half of the shloka, he describes the despair that he's going through, and where he calls death heartless and asks death, he's asking death, by taking my wife, what of mine has not been stolen? So he's feeling that loss so intensely, everything is lost for him when he loses his wife. And there is another example in the Vedas of why a wife is considered to be the best friend of a griha medhin, for a householder. Many of you know the story of sage Vashishtha and Arundhati, and some of you may not know, in the Hindu wedding, in the Hindu tradition, this is more, I think, more followed in South India, where one of the rituals of the marriage is when the priest will take the bride and the groom outside, and the groom points to this tower. The priest will tell the groom to point to the twin stars, Vashishtha and Arundhati. The groom has to point that to the bride. Now, in this example, you might have heard from Swamiji, but not in this context. In most twins, so this Arundhati and Vashishtha are twin stars. They're very close to each other. And in most twin star systems, one star is stationary and the other one rotates around, revolves around it. And this represents the relationship where one person is in the center and the other person goes around the relationship, supports that relationship. The stars, Vashishtha and Arundhati, are unique because even though they are twin stars, they revolve around each other. So it's a very beautiful, they are bound by the gravitational force between a common center of gravity between them. So by looking at the stars, the newlywed couple is told to emulate this relationship that Vashishtha and Arundhati have. There is no I and me in a partnership, in a marriage. There is only we and us. And it's unfortunate that many marriages, one partner ends up being more dominant than the other. And then the relationship is not really a partnership. We've seen this in many prior classes. A wife is called Dharmacharini, the one who helps you perform dharma, who helps the husband perform dharma. So this story of Vashishtha and Arundhati is considered to be the gold standard for devotion, for learning, for growth, for both the partners to grow in a marriage. And of course, we can, in today's world, the definition of marriage itself has changed. It's not only between husband and wife, it's between two people, whatever gender they are. So it's the same concept that applies to any committed relationship you are in. It is a partnership, and both partners need to grow. And kaha gruhi, and who is a householder? Gruhi is one who is a householder. Most of us think a householder is, if you own a home, you're a householder. And this is common in India, right? Many times in Indian parlance, you would say, yeah, he's a householder because you buy a home, you have a house. And some of you may remember Puja Swamiji's joke on this. He says, when you buy a house, you think you're a householder, but actually what happens, you're a householder. Because what happens? The house holds you. You have to be doing repairs, you have to pay the mortgage, so you get held by this house. The answer here is, it's not one who owns a house, but yaha yajate, the one yajna that comes from yajna, the one who performs rituals. And the next part of this verse defines what a ritual is. Kaha yajnyah, ko yajnyah, ko yajnyah, yashrutya vihitah, yashrutya vihitah, shreyas karo nrunam, shreyas karo nrunam. So kaha yajnyah, what is a sacrifice or a ritual? Most of us, our understanding of ritual and sacrifice is what? Most commonly, and I think this is very common among North Indians, I think especially Gujaratis, no disrespect to that, is Satyanarayan Puja, Satyanarayan Katha. That is the only ritual that most people know. Of course, there's no harm doing it, but here in the Vedas, in the scriptures, yajnyaha, a ritual is defined as yaha vihitaha, that which is prescribed or ordained or enjoined by what? Shrutya, by the shrutis or by the scriptures. Shreyaskaraha, that which does good, shreyaskara, that which is good, for whom? Nrinam, for people or for all mankind. And in the Vedas, a lot of importance was given to yajnas, was given to these rituals. A householder, a grihastha, had to mandatorily perform rituals. And a lot of this is described in the Purvakanda or the Karmakanda part of the Vedas. And these rituals fall into five categories. One was the Nitya Karma. Daily, things that were meant to be done daily. And these were mandatory, obligatory rituals that must be performed every day. And they were performed, they had to be done not to gain a specific reward. Remember, most rituals had a purpose of gaining something. Many rituals have that purpose. But these Nitya Karmas are to be done to maintain a spiritual discipline and avoid the sin of omission, what they call pratyavaya dosha. And some of the examples were Sandhya Vandanam, for those who've done, have the Upavitam, the who've had the Upanayana ceremony, the men who wear the sacred thread, Sandhya Vandanam was supposed to be performed every day. Swadhyaya and Pravachanam, study and chanting and were rituals that needed to be done every day. Then the second category was Naimitya Karma, which were rituals meant for specific occasions. They were not done every day, but they were done on occasion. They were still mandatory. And these are examples were like rituals that are done at the time of birth. There are certain rituals that need to be done at birth, or at ceremonies like weddings, there are wedding rituals, or a very common ritual was the Shraddha, the rituals that, yearly rituals, the monthly rituals that are done when somebody passes away. So these were the Nimitta or Naimittika karmas. The third category was the Kamya karma. These were considered to be optional rituals. Kamya means desired, so rituals done for the purpose of a specific to fulfill a certain desire. In the Vedas, they tell us it is okay to do rituals to get a certain desire fulfilled. And the most common example, a worldly desire, like the putra kameshti. So somebody who is wants to have a child would perform this elaborate ritual for wealth. There were many other rituals like that. Then there were rituals which were called nishiddha karma, which were forbidden, rituals that were prohibited by the shastras because they cause spiritual or social harm. And the example that comes to mind is some tantric rituals, which were meant, like almost like black magic, which were meant to cause harm to others. These were nishiddha karma, rituals that were not, that were completely forbidden or prohibited. And the last category is the prayaschitta karma, expiatory actions or expiatory ritual. So if you did some karma, did some action that caused harm to somebody, knowingly or unknowingly, then you would perform some prayaschitta karma. And a common example of this is tapas, like penance, like fasting, or maunam. These are common, or japa, repeating of a mantra. So the idea was, with all these rituals, was we want to increase our nitya naimittika karmas, the rituals that are done daily for our own good, for our own growth, and for the society, to minimize akamya karma, to minimize our actions which make us get more desires, which kind of suck us into this desire loop, to completely avoid nishiddha karma, rituals that are not meant to be done, and to do prayaschitta karma as needed. So these rituals all had very significance, were very significant in ancient times, and even today in some families where they practice all these, practice the Purvakanda, the Karmakanda of the Vedas, these rituals become important. And what do we take for us? I know most of us, and I know some of you are doing Sandhya Vandanam and Shraddham and rituals regularly, but for most of us, these are not regular aspects of our life. So how do we translate how these rituals or how these yajnas will help us? Doing something like puja, meditation, chanting will help us get prepared. Thus prepares our mind for gaining jnanam, for gaining the ultimate knowledge that will give us moksha. So these rituals become important for us in that sense. And with that, we will end our class. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinah, sarve santu niramayah, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukha bhag bhavet, asatoma sadgamaya, tamasoma jyotirgamaya, mrityorma amritangamaya. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Just a quick announcement reminder that since we spoke about rituals like for us, puja, chanting, meditation, we have our stotra class this evening at 5 o'clock. If you're still interested, you can talk to Pinky. She'll tell you where it will be held. It's not going to be held at the ashram. Thank you. I'll see you next time.